This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with playwright Kevin Kautzman. We're going to be discussing his play Moderation, which we touched upon in our last show. And Kevin's also host of the Heart of Darkness podcast. Kevin, great having you back on the show. And if you want to just give a brief introduction of yourself and your podcast and playwright background for those who didn't listen to the first interview.
All right. Okay, cool. Robert, thanks for having me. Yeah, I am a playwright living in St. Paul, Minnesota, and my new play, Moderation, is at moderationplay.com. Through December 19th, you can go to moderationplay.com, click the link. There's a theater company in L.A. called The Blank that does a series called The Living Room series. This year, it's online, so wherever you are, you can go, again, to moderationplay.com, click the link, RSVP. It's free. You can donate if you want to support the little theater there, and then you'll get an email, you'll get a link, and that is through December 19th, although I think they're going to continue to release it later in the month around the holidays. So you have some time to check it out. That play is a dark comedy about social media content moderators losing their minds at work. And so if you're interested in more modern theater, if you like Beckett, Pinter, that sort of theater, straight plays, I think you might find something there. Also, if you're very online, if you spend too much time on the Bird website like I do, if you think social media is making us all a little bit crazy.
One thing I'll say about it is it is important to see the characters' facial expressions, but if someone has a short time span or they want to multitask, it could be listened to as a podcast too.
Absolutely. And there is a version of it that we released as a podcast quite a while ago, many months ago. I worked with a fellow, Jeff Giese, and Jeff, I met him through Twitter, connected. We adapted one of the earlier Zoom readings of the play into a podcast. That's all at moderationplay.com. The play really has yet to premiere. This is the fourth, the Blank Theater's Zoom reading, the Zoom presentation of it is the fourth Zoom reading of the play from four different theaters. So there's something going on with the play. It's not just in my head. People seem to be responding to it, which these days it's about as much as a playwright could hope for. I have my friend Abby Lucas directed it, and a couple of very talented actors, Michael Backinson and Amanda Forstrom. It was quite fun to do. When we recorded it, it was all on Zoom. We had LA on the line producing, the gal at the Blank, Bree, who was tremendous. Then we had us in the Twin Cities, Amanda and myself. I had to bring some equipment to Amanda to do this. She's in town here with me. We're actually starting a theater company ourselves here. That's another story.
So Amanda is the main actress from of the two characters in the play.
Yes, so it's a two-hander, and so it's Amanda. Michael was in New York when we recorded, and Abby was in London. So we had four time zones, and we got it done, and so hopefully people enjoy it. The other thing is the podcast, and that's Art of Darkness, and that is at artofdarkpod.com, and that is a podcast I do with my very good friend Brad Kelly. We attempt to do two a month, two episodes, where we talk about the dark side of a creative person. The last episode we did was last evening. Brad, Aldous Asterion, Forest of Symbols podcast, he came on as a guest, and we did James Joyce. We did 3 hours and more than 3 hours on James Joyce. So that's at artofdarkpod.com. Yep.
Yeah, Moderation, it's a psychological thriller and a dark comedy about two social media moderators. Theme of social media is huge and how much it's transformed our life for better or worse. I also think like it has have negative psychological and social implications, but at the same time it's kind of hypocritical to bash it too much as like everything if you're a podcaster, I think for maybe the average person it's mostly negative, but for say if you're promoting yourself online it is maybe a bit hypocritical. But like the whole premise of taking into account the impact of social media, how did you come up with the premise of the social media moderators going crazy? And I noticed like the bird noise, I'm not sure if that's intended to be like symbolic of the outdoors they're missing out on. I'm not sure, but how did you come up with the premise?
Yeah, the premise, it's something that I've wanted to write about for many years. I had been thinking about writing a play like this at least since 2015, 2016. I only sat down to write it in 2019. And the thing that really spurred me on was an article. I can't precisely remember where, but it was an article that came out where one of these, it might have been The Atlantic, one of these normie rags could not, they were all scandalized by the fact that a number of these content moderators were being radicalized to some of the conspiracy theories that they were being forced to moderate. That to me, that is when it all locked in. I'm a fan of conspiracy culture, conspiracy theories. I think they are our ghost stories. There are folk tales told around these digital devices, and they operate with the same, sensuality, intensity, immediacy as a good campfire story. But of course, the local is now global in a funny way, right? And so, you know, instead of talking about old Widow Cratchit, we talk about Q and Ghislaine Maxwell and the real monsters. So there's a similarity, I think, between the folktale and the conspiracy. But yeah, and so I thought, well, and then one of my early plays, which had a premiere in New York City, it's called If You Start a Fire, Be Prepared to Burn. And I wrote that. We did a production of that in 2011. That's actually in print from Broadway Play Publishing. You can find it on my website. It's just my name, kevinkautzman.com, KAUTZMAN. All the links are there. That's published, like I said, by Broadway Play Publishing. And that play is about online sex work. So I wrote that play maybe 10 years too early. I the internet is a subject that fascinates me.
Was this the Money Shot show?
Yeah, we adapted If You Start a Fire, was adapted into a TV concept, which we turned into kind of a web series. You can find that at moneyshotshow.com. Again, Abby and I collaborated on that with our friend Lenny Platt. Lenny is a very talented, well-known actor in New York, and we created that series, that short web series. That was in the New Zealand Web Fest, and like I said, it's online at moneyshotshow.com. But my point is, when I heard that, when I read that story about the content moderators starting to talk about World Trade Center 7 and all the rest of it, and being going down the rabbit hole of the things that these companies want them to scrub from the web, that immediately presented itself to me as a dramatic idea. And then it was only a matter of sitting down and actually writing the play.
So maybe for some people like Twitter, like Twitter's really cracking down on, they're really censoring hard now, and like some people, it might be hard to be sympathetic to mods, as a lot of people hate the censors. But yeah, I see it's true. I'm sure like there's been many cases of people being radicalized as moderators because just spending hours and hours looking for this content, it's bound to happen. And then there's all these kind of like these online meme references, like I think like Zog isn't even alt-right. It's kind of like from like 20 years ago, like far right, and then you like, are Jews right? And then the 9/11 conspiracy, and maybe QAnon. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm not sure if you reference incels, but kind of like the school shooter narratives and memes. So it's not an alt-right play, but it's dark humor that is still palatable to a normie audience for those who enjoy the genre of dark comedy. But it must have been a lot of fun to work on.
Yeah, I had an alt account on the Bird website, which was eventually killed. When I was over in England, they got it because presumably there are different rules there. But I had a pretty spicy frog anon account while I was researching this. Fun is maybe not the word. I had some fun, but it was also very dark and good to pull out of when it was time to actually write the play. I did put in the hours. I went down some pretty dark rabbit holes and found my way back. But this is the kind of thing you do if you're a serious playwright. It's not enough just to LARP it. You want to kind of go in and have some experience. And happily, it was all online, so I could do my quote unquote research principally from my from my phone and my computer. I don't even know if Twitter would allow me to create a second account now. Still,
yeah, they're really cracking down on alt accounts, and like they're changing. Like the software and the algorithms are picking up on that because it used to be like pretty easy to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Of course, all that pressure is coming, no doubt, from advertisers. That really is what it's about. In addition to the social engineering, but it's hard to know where the one ends and the other begins these
days.
Yeah,
and I don't want to go off too much of a tangent off the play, but I have no like Keith Woods is this figure. I don't know if. You describe him as alt-right or third position, but he recently got his account shut down on Twitter, and he had this this excellent video exposing. So there's this new CEO replacing Jack Dorsey, who's from India, but there's more focus on the CEO. I think it's more there's this guy Paul Singer, who's a neocon vulture capitalist who bought a massive share in Twitter, and a lot of people are blaming him for the major shift because Jack Dorsey was viewed as like too libertarian, too lenient.
Yeah, of course. And again, I have no doubt that it comes down to revenue and advertisers.
Sure.
Advertisers want a comfortable space for them and for themselves. They don't want to be associated with anything that might put a stain on their brand. Yeah, the other thing about moderation that inspired me was these rather famous news stories, these articles. There was one The Verge did, which was these stories were about these moderators really going nuts, people dying at their desks, the long hours. These are not glamorous tech jobs. These are the jannies. These are the janitors of the internet. These are the sewage workers of the web. And Facebook doesn't employ these people directly. Facebook employs these folks through contractors. And it's long hours, it's low pay, and they don't get, I mean, hitherto, they were not getting any sort of psychological support. So there's a really strong vibration here around kind of like an MK Ultra situation, a bit of a Clockwork Orange. Can you imagine if your job 8 to 10 hours a day was to go to some strange office or even to like plug in at home, knowing that you were going to be confronted with a fire hose of the very worst of humanity?
I'm trying to think, like, I think there's maybe reference to like bestiality, like goldfish, but it's interesting, like, what they stumble across, like, really disturbing. So, like, do they ever stumble across like a snuff film or something blatantly illegal, or is it mostly just the usual, just censoring, like, Groyper memes? It's hard to say if they do see stuff that is like seriously that could cause serious psychological harm depending like on what their background is.
Yeah, in the play exists in a version of our world that's maybe one or two twisted notches away, but unfortunately the world seems to be catching up more and more to the play. That's something people have noted. Other theater people have said, oh, no, you know, unfortunately your play is right on. I'm like, oh man,
oh, yeah.
I wish it wasn't. But here we are.
So yeah, the main social commentaries on social media and impact of technology on our lives and psychology. I noticed there is a kind of like a gender war theme of the male character. He's sort of I guess you'd say a kind of like a marginalized like gamma male, and like the from his coworker, who's a woman, there's a kind of cold-hearted reaction towards the end, like she just gets her promotion. And so is it just, it's more of a critique of the corporate world? Were you intentionally trying to have a sort of comment on gender relations, or would you say it's more of a side note?
That's interesting. I hadn't really thought, it was not a conscious thought as I was writing. And I think that's one of the strengths of the play, is that the play lives in this territory where it isn't entirely clear what's happening, because they're playing these verbal games with one another, akin to maybe a Pinter play, where there's just so much ambivalence, it's not even entirely clear what the nature of the relationships are.
Yeah, it's hard if they're joking around, like if she has a dark sense of humor, or if she is blackmailing him at that moment. It's a bit unclear.
Right, and that's the whole purpose of it, right? It is meant to be a metaphor or a representation. Maybe metaphor is the wrong word there, but it symbolizes the nature of the media that we're engaged with, where in a lot of these exchanges, we have no clue who we're talking with online, right? You're talking with some spicy anon. You don't know, is it a woman? Is it a man? Is it glowy? What are we doing? And that's part of the subtext of this strange new internet culture that we have. But putting it into the theater, which we've yet to really do, although we are going to have the first live reading of Moderation here in St. Paul. The theater company that I want to plug, we're just starting this. It's going to be called Bad Mouth Theater Company. It's going to be badmouthtc.com. We found this great venue. We're going to do a reading series next year, starting in March. I'm gonna announce it on this podcast. I haven't mentioned this anywhere else, and it's not on the website, but we found a brewery called Waldman's Brewery. It's one of the oldest buildings in Minnesota, and they're really enthusiastic about having plays read. Moderation is going to be the first play we do in that series, and then we'll be doing a series of other plays, some new plays. We want to do No Exit as the second play in the context of lockdowns and Hell Is Other People and everything else. The point of putting this content, this idea into the theater is meant to create this strange tension and to be a representation of our very, very strange online lives, but put on the stage.
So, yeah, it's a dark comedy genre. I have a brand new novel out. It's a sequel to my first novel. It's called Vaporfornia, and I'll plug that on the podcast later, probably in a couple weeks, but it is a dark comedy, also referencing meme culture. And then a number of recent films that I've seen, the dark comedy genre, I'm Just Fucking With You, and Spree, I don't know if you've seen them, but you're an overall fan of the dark comedy genre in cinema, literature, and in theater. If you want to talk about the genre and any specific pieces that have influenced you, or just something that you've enjoyed.
Yeah, I have a movie club with a few friends of mine, this one buddy of mine.
So have you seen the two that I mentioned? Mm-hmm. I'm Just Fucking With You.
No. Spree. No, I haven't. No. They're pretty recent.
Spree is, I think they're both fairly recent. So Spree is about, it's a parody of a guy who's like a Uber Lyft driver who goes on like a Elliot Rodger incel type massacre throughout LA, and he live streams it. And then the other one, okay, I'm Just Fucking With You, is about, it's by Bloom, the Blumhouse, like, horror production company that did The Purge, okay, and about a guy who's also a bit incel, and he's very depressed, and he's going to the wedding of his crush at this kind of, like, old kind of mid-century type hotel with his sister, and there's a crazy guy who's playing pranks on him, but then he ends up being a serial killer at the end. I guess those are, like, two I can think of, but then I noticed, like, some of these, like, dark comedies, they still put in something a bit of a woke angle, like, maybe, like, toxic masculinity, but I guess, like, most, like, comedy films are garbage, except for, that's, like, the only good, I like Curb Your Enthusiasm and anything that's dark comedy, but most, like, mainstream normie comedy films, of the past decade, at least, have been complete garbage.
Yeah, I think maybe the last truly great comedy is I can never remember, A Tropic Thunder. Transgressive and could never be made now. by these huge A-list people.
But yeah, even Idiocracy. Idiocracy was great, but even like the really kind of like schlocky, cheesy, like zeros, like sex comedies. Like those were pretty stupid. But even though a lot of those couldn't be made today, like the generic sort of zeros type comedy.
Yeah, the one where there's always the $500,000 wedding that nobody can quite explain. All right. The weddings are all, it's just these incredibly extravagant affairs, and you just want to grab the producers by the throat and go, read the room. What are we doing here? This is so unrelatable. And yet that's what people wanted to see for whatever reason, or else it wouldn't have been made that way. You know, you were talking about all these like little notes into practically everything now, and it really paint by number kind of approach. You have this business, whatever you're producing, in order to justify the making of it, which is quite odd. And there's no one thing directing it either. It's just, I guess, what Yarvin would call the cathedral, what you might call the regime. We all know what the rules are. Nobody ever wrote them outright, and yet peers spontaneously in every piece of media that makes it through.
Yeah, this kind of goes back to like social media censorship. It's hard to say with cinema, like how much of it is deliberately politicized or political control, or a lot of it is just like the end result of like the corporatization of media, like centralized corporate power appealing to mass audiences, stifling creativity, like which is the bigger problem. I lean towards the second, but it's probably a bit of both.
I was talking about the milieu of the people who gatekeep and create the material that makes it into the mainstream. There are so many gatekeepers between any piece of content and normie land, even now, even though we sort of think, oh, everything's so distributed and everything. So it's so clear still that they control the levers of what gets seen, what doesn't, what gets hyped, what doesn't. It's not as simple to break through as people might like to imagine. Although I do believe in this time now that there are no excuses. We've got these microphones, we have these supercomputers in our pockets. We really should only be limited by our imaginations, and as artists, I don't think we definitely don't want to sit around and wait for Hollywood, whatever that is, to give us permission to make things.
Yeah, like even a lot of these well-renowned filmmakers of the past, like David Lynch and Stanley Kubrick, couldn't get a foothold in like in today's climate.
Oh, it's so interesting to think about how Kubrick would navigate the world today, what that would look like. We did an episode of Art of Darkness about Stanley Kubrick, and he was a D student. He found his way, I think he was 17, 18 years old, and he was working for not Time Magazine as a photographer, but kind of the next level of magazine. He was a hustler for sure. He made his first movie. He made with money from, I think it was a dentist in the neighborhood, a Bronx, you know, Jewish Bronx dentist, and some other people from the neighborhood got together, gave him some money. He and his friends went out to California. They made a movie called, I think, The Killing, and he nearly killed them. He nearly killed his cast with some gas, some poison gas. And the movie got a little bit of notice. It got a bit of attention, and I think it wasn't that many years later he was on the set of Spartacus, picking up the pieces and turning that into a major, major hit. But it's almost impossible to imagine a comparable career now. Never mind the abuses and the intensity on set, what he did to Shelley Duvall, all the rest of it. Would Kubrick be canceled now for not respecting Shelley Duvall's space or something? You know, like where it's impossible to imagine someone like Kubrick.
Was this in The Shining? Yeah, I actually did. I may have seen it a really, really long time ago, but I'm pretty sure I saw it for the first time several months ago.
Oh, The Shining. The Shining, I must have seen 30 times, and is a perennial for me. If you want to watch another fun film, watch the documentary Room 237, which is about people who are obsessed with The Shining.
I don't think I've heard of the documentary. I did watch... I watched a movie on Amazon, which was, it was a more recent, it was supposed to be the sequel to The Shining, which was, I actually saw the sequel first. Yeah, Doctor Sleep, it was good, but obviously it wasn't on the same level as the original.
No, nothing ever will be. Dr. Sleep was all right. I would give Dr. Sleep like a B or a B minus.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah, it's all right. And look, it is, Dr. Sleep is creepy because of the idea that there is this murderous, pedophilic cult of vampire people who sustain themselves off of the souls of the horror of children. And of course, that's again, you're talking about folk tales, you're talking about Q, you're talking about Adrenochrome and all the rest of it, and Pizzagate and all this. It's the same thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is weird because it's like a right-wing conspiracy theory, but then there's all these like themes in Hollywood. The kind of irony is interesting. But I guess getting back to moderation, one thing I'll say is in general, I have a pretty short attention span, a low attention span of getting bored easily. And I guess crave, like in theater or cinema, a sense of movement and motion and going to different places. But even though this was fairly simple, it was in one location the entire time, like the subject matter was still enough, the plot, the interactions to keep my interest going till the end.
I'm glad. That's about the best that a playwright can hope for. We're up against a lot of different media. You can always, especially if it's a Zoom reading, something you have, you're streaming, you can always just close it and go back on the Bird website and get into a fight with somebody.
Oh yeah.
get into a fight with a blue check.
So yeah, you mentioned being online because of COVID, and eventually you're going to have live theater showings. Do you want to comment more on the two actors and the casting process, and anything else about the production process?
Yeah. Sure. Well, Michael's a friend of mine from New York City, from Washington Heights. He's still there with his family, and a very talented actor, journeyman actor, I would say. And he's also a professor. He teaches, can't remember, I think it's Lehman College. And just a great guy, very talented. He was in one of the first, I think the first table read that I ever did, the private kind of, hey, what do I have here reading? He was also in a reading that Up Theater in Manhattan did earlier in the summer. And so I wanted to pair him with Amanda, who was in the first reading of Moderation, which was done by Spooky Action Theater in D.C. I wanted to pair those two because I like them both. Amanda and I are co-founding this theater company with Amanda's husband, Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul here. And yeah, it just felt like a natural kind of thing. It's like, these are two of my favorite actors. I was able to get one of my favorite people, my screenwriting partner and good friend, Abby, who's a film director and a theater director. I was able to tap her for that part of it. It was fun. It's nice. It's a case of just like, and the blank was amazing with this. I really have to give serious props to the blank. They, and also Bree, the gal there, her last name escapes me. But she's done hundreds of these Zoom presentations, and her professionalism was off the charts. They were flexible. They worked with us, and I've never used OBS, this open source broadcasting software, to make a play like that, right? And you want it to be not just a couple of people reading on Zoom, although that's fine. But
I think you mentioned this, but to clarify, this was recorded on Zoom. They were not in the same location when this was filmed.
No, they've never met in person. It was all done on Zoom. And yeah, she was in Minnetonka here in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, and he was in New York City.
Oh yeah, so anything else you'd like to add about the production process?
No, just that it was a good experience. It's fun, and it's nice that people have been able to access it and get it. And eventually, though, it is meant to be done live. And I like this as an example, though, of in the theater, the fun of it, right? Like, hey, these are just people that I enjoy working with, people who I think are talented. Let's get together and make something. It's fun. I enjoy that.
Did you get any interesting responses? And then are any reviews from like theater magazines or culture magazines you want to plug?
Yeah, this wouldn't even be anything I would want someone to review. Unfortunately, we're in kind of a no man's land here, where this is technically part of the development process of the play, and the etiquette of the theater It would kind of almost be a violation of the etiquette for a reviewer to come in and review this, because it's not a production. It's not a premiere of the play. So no, there hasn't really been anything like that. Although I have, you know, on social media, people have noticed it and kind of retweeted it and shared it around on our little weird corner of Twitter. And I'm grateful for that. It's nice to see people kind of support like a living art, like a living group of artists, right? It's just really easy to support the dead. Oh, he was so great. He's dead. He's not a threat anymore. But, you know, and then I've got my Telegram chat open over here. I do a little bit of crypto stuff. And I've been hearing from that group of people. Just somebody over here just messaged me a few minutes ago saying, hey, I'm thinking about the goldfishes. I'm thinking about the fish in the play. And then it's like one of the symbols.
Oh, I don't know if you saw this, but someone posted a meme. Like one of those kind of like frog Twitter types of a Pepe looking at like a cartoon of like tadpole porn and like the Pepe mom and like the Pepe cops coming in his room.
Oh no, I haven't seen that.
I was thinking, like, is that where you got the inspiration, or was it pretty random?
No, it's kind of random. I think it might have been the Pink Floyd lyric.
Oh yeah,
two lost souls living in a fish bowl. But it's also the language. So what do we say? What's the plural of fish? Fishes? Fish? Or you know, what is? How do you moderate language when the language itself has all these ambivalences? How do we know if it's a joke or not? Do we destroy this person's account because they make a joke we don't like, because the joke doesn't land?
A lot of it is up to discretion or personal biases. There's no consistent regulations.
Yeah, the film that came out right after I finished this that made me think, well, yeah, I'm kind of in line with a certain vibe in the zeitgeist, was Joker. When Joker came out,
oh, right.
I thought, there are a lot of themes in my play that are comparable to Joker, I would say. Yeah.
And the amount of... Actually, Joker was the last film that I saw in actual theater. I haven't gone to a movie since then, but it was just mm-hmm. ridiculous how much hysteria there was about it.
Oh, I mean, it was just absolutely nuts, right? Young, presumably white men were going to, you know, destroy the theaters. There was going to be a bloodbath, a massacre of copycats and all the rest of it. And then, of course, the real threat, this COVID lockdown garbage, comes around the bend, and that's the real hysteria. That's the real... Joker's a fabulous movie. Joker is next level good. I've watched that 5 or 6 times. Yeah, and I saw that in the cinema in L.A. Pretty cool.
I guess one more thing that's a bit off topic. If you're in Minneapolis Metro, is that city really going to shit?
I'm in St. Paul, but yes, it's one big metro, I think. Yet those distinctions are important. Apparently, if they're going to shut down one of the police departments, it's important which side of the line you live on. We live in St. Paul. But I went into this in depth on the Belulu podcast. Are you familiar with this?
No.
Oh yeah, this is a good one. Our pal Lasad Corday on the Bird website does a podcast called the Belulu Podcast. So we talked about this at length recently. Let me just say this: it's not getting better. And anybody who has lived here for a long time can sort of see the Detroitization, the sort of rot setting in. And
there is an exodus like there was out of Detroit.
I think that there probably will be. I think there may have already, it might have already happened. I only moved back here in 2020, so I was living in New York City prior to that. Now, I don't want to talk smack.
You moved there right when the mm-hmm. George Floyd incident happened.
A couple months prior, yeah.
All right.
It was pretty traumatic couple of years for everybody in the cities here. And I love the Twin Cities. I went to the University of Minnesota. I have family here. It's a great place to live and raise a family, or it was. And the crime is getting out of control. The sense of kind of dystopian squalor is sort of rising. Downtown St. Paul looks like a ghost town. It was already a little bit ghostly, but it had enough events. It had enough things going on that, okay, we got a wild hockey game tonight. The Saints are playing, the AAA team or whatever it is, we're playing. Okay, we got something going on. We got the opera. But with that all gone, it was really, because we lived downtown right when we moved back, it was like Fallout, oh yeah, you betcha. Fallout, Fargo mode. It was scary and not good. But Minnesotans are a stoic lot, and we will see if it turns around in the next 5 to 10 years. I'm optimistic because I have to be. I have kids, but at the same time, I also really fear that this business around Floyd and the unrest, everything that happened, has really, really hurt the image of the place and the brand of the place as a good place, a good, quiet, kind of safe place to raise kids. That's been kind of shattered. That illusion has been shattered a bit during what is kind of the heaviest migration that we've seen in a really, really long time out of the major cities into these second and third tier cities. And I'm afraid Minneapolis is like going to really miss out on a lot of that potential as young professionals, young families look for cities to live in outside of LA, outside of New York, outside of Chicago. So I'm worried. I'm a concerned parent and I'm a concerned citizen here. My daughter has to wear a mask at her German immersion school, which is this great charter school, but I don't love that. I really don't like the governor was lockdown happy last year, and of course we've seen how that has all sort of worked out. And then of course I could drive in 25 minutes, I could be in Wisconsin where there were none of that really went down. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you're interested, you can check out, you know, what I talked about on the Blue podcast. We really went in depth to sort of the Minnesota question and all the rest of it. But I love it. You know, great people, good middle American city, diverse in a way that, you know, is genuine and should work. But there's also a sense of like creeping poverty, creeping decay, a bit of a sense of like flight and, frankly, a lot of crime and gang activity and all the rest of it. If you want to look at like the shot map, like the gunshot map of Minneapolis this year, it's pretty rough.
Oh yeah,
it's Garrison Keillor has left town. If you know what I mean, this is not Little House on the Prairie out here right now. So that's my bit on that.
We're getting close to the end of the show. Kevin, do you want to plug where to find Moderation online and how long it will air for, and then plug any other upcoming projects or recent podcasts on your Art of Darkness show?
Sure. Tremendous. Robert, thanks for having me. I always enjoy speaking with you, and I'm excited for your book, too. I like the title quite a lot, and so I'm going to look out for that. Yeah, I'm Kevin Kautzman. The play is Moderation. The best place to go for that is moderationplay.com. Even if you're listening to this down the line, there'll be something going on there. And the blank reading is going to be available through December 19th of 2021. The other thing that we're really excited about is Art of Darkness, and we're getting a lot of good feedback about that. I love hearing from people when they want to reach out and say, hey, do an episode about so-and-so, do an episode about the next one. It's going to be Bill Hicks. We've got a special guest coming on for that. A comedian is going to come on and help us talk about Bill Hicks. So that's a lot of fun. We already have 20 episodes in the can, so hours and hours of content you can get for free. We do a little Patreon where there's extra content for people who subscribe. So that's all at Art of Dark Pod. That's on Twitter at Art of Dark Pod. The website's artofdarkpod.com. Trying to think of anything else. The other one is the theater company. And we're looking, if you're in the Twin Cities, if you're in Minnesota, badmouthtc.com. But beyond that, we're going to be doing digital content through that too. So wherever you are, maybe check that out. We want to make some solid theater, and we're going to start with that reading series next year and then expand and hopefully become not an institution, but, you know, a real kind of living theater company that does plays. Maybe we do 2 or 3 productions a year and make cool stuff and get people together in the room the way that it's meant to be.
Kevin Kautzman, great show. Thanks for being on, and check out his play Moderation.
All right. Thank you so much, Robert. I always appreciate it.